I'd like to request you pray a special heart for me today. We lead a very busy life at home. And yesterday, while my wife was in town trying to do some last-minute shopping, I was trying to keep my handicapped boy Danny entertained and packed for this trip, do four or five things at once. And woke up very early this morning, which I always do, waiting on Brother Jerry Don, and tried to cover all my bases, but apparently I missed a few. I'm here this morning with a borrowed Bible. How about that? Didn't bring a watch, so I borrowed this smartphone. Didn't bring any cough drops or anything like that, so if the Lord blesses, this will be a one-jug sermon. If He doesn't bless, and if He does bless, maybe it'll be a two. And ordinarily, windmills pump water. I'm a windmill that runs on water. So let us proceed this morning. I appreciate all the kind remarks. Appreciate people that have come from a long distance. But I have got to follow the impressions of my mind this morning. Don't know of any other way to do. I've never followed any rule in trying to preach the gospel other than to pray the Lord to direct my mind where He would want me to go. And so if it's of the Lord, it will very soon be manifest. If it's just one of my whims, that will also show itself up too. There was a time about 3 years ago at the church I've pastored now for many, many years, that I spoke to our congregation on a sort of a fairy tale that the Arab desert people tell their children. It's one of these that's designed to teach a lesson. You might be thinking of something that you were told. It was not just to be funny or anything like that, but there was some kind of lesson in it. I remember when I was a small boy in the ranch country of Oklahoma, I had a great big book about like this. My mother would read to me out of it. And there was a stream, just a short stream. There was a small bridge going over it. There was a dog came over that bridge, went up to a country home, and this lady had a steak laid up in the window, maybe to thaw out, I don't know, for whatever reason. This dog leaps up, grabs that steak, and takes off racing with it. As he goes across that little bridge, he looks over and sees what he thinks is another dog that also has a piece of steak. He opens his mouth to get that other dog's piece of steak, and he loses the one he had. That's as vivid in my mind today as looking at you. Of course, the lesson in that is several. Be content with what you have. A lesson against greed, a lesson against covetousness. So I remember very vividly some stories I was told back then to carry across the point. Now, all across the Mideast, among the Arab peoples of North Africa, sweeping on through the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, and I had an old Jewish friend that spoke six languages. Worked for many years for British Overseas Coach, translating five. And according to her, and if you go look up in the encyclopedia, that is not the house of Saud, it's Sud. Sudai. Got a Z sound in it. Sudai Arabia. But according to the Sudais all across the Mideast, there's a lesson they teach their children in order to carry across the point. That lesson is the lesson of the camel in the tent. About 3 years ago, I spoke one morning. Brother Jerry Don recalled it this morning as we drove down here in the wee hours of the morning. I spoke on the camel in the tent. Brother Johnny Robertson, one of our deacons, who was once a strong, able-bodied man, but suffered a stroke back in 09. Didn't affect his mind. His memory's still sharp. He could tell me more about Young County history and all that. He's sharp as ever mentally, but somewhat paralyzed on his left side. Made a statement after he heard it, said, "I sure wish that had been recorded." It was not. He came to me one time and said, "I hope you go somewhere where they have recording equipment and preach again on the camel in the tent. I'd like to have a copy." Well, I'm down here this morning. I trust this is being recorded. Maybe a El Flopo, don't know. But the camel in the tent. And I'm going to jump all the way to the conclusion of the story. In America and all over the civilized world, last week, the camel went all the way into the tent. You said, "I didn't read anything about it in the papers." No, of course not. You said, "I didn't read anything about it on CBC or NBC or ABC or didn't see it on HBO, Hell Blown Out." No, of course you didn't. But I've got more documentation for what I'm about to tell you. If you're interested, I'll give you some references where you can go to your computer. Of course, it wouldn't mean a whole lot to most of the public. But when you interpret this through the spectacles of someone that's been reading the Bible since, say, about 7 years old, and you're also going to find that if you could obtain some tapes I preached at Cool Springs, Georgia, summer, August, 1973, 46 years ago. I didn't fill in all I hoped to fill in this morning, but I put up the structure like a man building a rough outline. Back in those days, I just referred to the Ishmaelite. Today, we call them Islam, which is divided into two factions, the Shiites and the Sunnis. And I've contended for, in recent years, among primitive Baptists, tapes are available, that the whole root of this situation we have in the Mideast, which will eventually bathe the world in blood, goes back to the Shiite-Sunni dispute that had its roots back in the days of Jacob and Esau. You've heard of the Family Feud, such a show on TV. Longest standing family feud in the Bible is found, go back in the book of Genesis. First of all, we start with the brothers. Then we're going to move on down to the nephews. Then we're going to move on down to the cousins. It's going on in this world today. One of the bloodiest disputes in history. Okay. The camel in the tent. I told you last week, as far as I'm concerned, the camel went all the way into the tent. The story of the camel in the tent goes this way. There was a wealthy sheikh. A lot of our people call them sheikhs, that was comfortable in his tent one cold night. And if you know anything about the desert country, over there can be blazing hot by day, but the nights can be chilly and very cold. So the rich sheikh is inside his tent in all the comfort you could imagine under this situation. His poor camel been tied outside. After a while, the camel parts tent flap, sticks his nose in. He said, "Good master, it's cold out here. May I warm my nose?" "Oh, sure, come on in." Little while, camel said, "It's still cold out here, buddy. I warm my head. Come on in." After a while, he said, "My forefront is cold. May I come on in?" Shakes it. "Come on in." He gets his front parts in. "Good master, I'm cold all over." Master's sound asleep. Camel goes in and roots him out. The master takes over his tent. That's pretty well the end of the Hansel and Gretel dog with a raw piece of meat story that is commonly told all through the Mideast. You say, well, what being the point? What's the point? Well, quite a few years ago, I was introduced to some people up here where Brother Bloyd and this other good brother come from. This back in the days, Elder Jim Compton and Brother Robert Cottle. They had some nearby neighbors. I don't say too much about these people anymore because I happen to know that the Islamics are all over that internet monitoring everything goes on. I don't give out too much information about them anymore. I might ought to stop right here. And to the benefit of any that might want to monitor me, these folks have moved to another location. Last time I was up in your country and got word to them, they showed up to hear me preach. I suppose I could find them if I tried. But these folk came out to hear me preach at Old Columbia a few times, came over to Brother Cottle's to visit. And these are people that I feel like if I had them to myself just a little while, privately, might be able to lead them to the truth. I didn't say lead them to Christ. I've seen evidence that they're children of God already. These people are Sunni Muslims from Iran. In Iran, 86% of the people are Sunnis. But that country's ruled over by another faction called the Shiites. And Sunnis are the majority, but the Shiites have the power. And I could take off and go down side trails about how that I was reading long years ago that Iran is our friend, and one of these days, if we ever go to war, here's our friend that will strike at the soft underbelly of Russia. Therefore, we were training their pilots at Shepherd, giving them the very best we have. Another quick explanation. Well, the land we called Iran today was called Persia till 1935. Some of your encyclopedias will say that name's changed 1936. The legislation was introduced 1935, approved of 1936. Say why they changed the name. Iran means land of the Aryans. Iran's such a large country, not all those people in Iran are Persian. There's a section over in the southwest that most of us would call it Elam. It's Elam. Go to Jeremiah, Ezekiel, there's a lot of things in there about God's judgments in the last days on Elam. Elam goes down overnight. Well, Elam is very mountainous. Most of those Iranian nuclear facilities are underground. They were built there by Russian engineers years ago. They're not on really good foundations. And somebody said, are you thinking that maybe one American or Jewish airstrike? Yeah, there might be that. One earthquake from Almighty God. Just one earthquake from Almighty God, these nuclear facilities all over southwest Iran in Elam. Take your Bible sometime. Look up everything it'll tell you over here on Elam. If you want to say Elam, fine. You find in Acts chapter 2, people of about 17 nations were gathered together on the day of Pentecost. Among them are Elamites. Okay. So, because not everybody there is Persian, became Iran. I'll just refer to it as Iran the rest of the way. But you be sure, Iran, Persia, one and the same. Okay, back to the Old Testament. Persia was one of the very ancient enemies of Israel. So some very wicked people overthrew the regime of our puppet over there, the Shah, Sunni, And they installed the present regime of the Ayatollahs, strictly Shiite. Now, I want to deal here with some geography. It helped to have a map of the Mideast back here, but I think you've got good imaginations. We have over here, up here we have Shiite Turkey. Sunni Turkey. We come into the Balkans of southern Russia. Sunni. We jump over a bit. We have the whole Saudi Arabia, or Saudi Arabia Peninsula, whole bunch, Yemen, Aden, whole bunch, United Arab Republic. That whole peninsula there is Sunni. Move into Egypt, Sunni. Across North Africa, mostly Sunni. But let's go back here to Iran. Iran has had troops, advisors, and all that, and the problem we've had in Iraq. Move next door, we're going west. We come over into Syria. We have Mr. Bashar Assad, backed by the Russians. And then you've got the anti-Assads. Then you've got ISIS. And, okay, I think you're familiar with all this horrible situation before. We move over to the Mediterranean. In the Mediterranean is the nation of Lebanon, which my old friend I've told you about was raised most of her life, born in Haifa, raised most of her life in Lebanon, which she tells me was once the rose of the earth, the beautiful country. But Hezbollah, Shiite, controlled by Iran, completely controls Lebanon. So we have Lebanon over here. We have Iran over here. We have Iran could very easily dominate Iraq, very easily with Russian backing, dominate Syria. So what have we got? We've got a Shiite wall all the way through, right through the middle of Sunni country. That's where we are right now. I may have time to circle back and give you some different ideas that the Sunnis, the Shiites have about the so-called coming of the Lord, about the what folks refer to as the final battle of Armageddon and all that. May come back and pick that up later. Okay. These folk I became well acquainted with, way back there in our dealings with them, and I would see the man shed tears over listening to me preach at Old Columbia, tell me about some of his experiences. And I said to him one night in the conversation, I said, I've read lots of quotes from the Quran, I think by reputable people, but I don't like to quote things I have not read myself. This fine gentleman gave me a copy of the Quran. I don't recommend you go buy one. We have the Arabic up here. We have the English down here. Then down below are the footnotes by the Islamic scholar trying to influence you. Sample. Genesis chapter 22. You know what God said to Abraham? Go and take thy son, thine only son Isaac, into the land of Moriah and offer him upon one of the mountains. I will tell thee of. You're told down here in the footnotes that Abraham did not offer up Isaac on that mountain. He offered up Ishmael. Oh, that it was not in the land of Moriah. It's moved over to another location. A lot of things down here. You say, oh, yeah, I've heard of the Quran. Muhammad wrote the Quran. Muhammad could neither read or write. And if they pick one of these tapes up, I don't think they'll shoot me or anything like that for calling them illiterate. But let me use their own language. The Arabic commentator down here speaks of the knowledge that Muhammad had, and he said, isn't it amazing that this unlettered prophet could know all this? So, folks, You shouldn't shoot me poison. Me call him unlettered. I'm quoting from your own holy book. Have you read it? Next amazing fact. Worldwide illiteracy, not being able to read, is about 70% of this world's population. Illiteracy among Islamics in North Africa, sometimes almost 100%. Likewise going the other ways, maybe 70%. These are people who do not learn from reading. They learn orally. I've listened to men preach. I could pretty well tell that this fellow doesn't read for himself. Because this fellow picks up something, Brother David, he gets something, Brother Varnus, something from Brother Blowett, sort of puts it all together. Okay, these people mostly learn orally. So, different parts of the world, imams can take this book here and pretty well interpret it the way they like. Right after 9-1-1-0-1, we had that service in the National Cathedral, and I thought that was Billy Graham's, one of his finest hours. Went up our old and feeble, led up there. I preached a majestic message. Had a Jewish rabbi. But I also remember one of the leading Islamic clerics in America. Got up and said, Islam is a religion of love. There's not a word in that book, the Quran, about you loving each other. You're only supposed to love Allah. Islam, by the way, means submission. That does not mean submission to God. It means submission to Muhammad. They use a lot of your vocabulary, but they don't have your dictionary. Okay. Now then, in the Quran, Muhammad lays out the steps by which his followers are to gradually, over a long period of time, infiltrate, migrate this entire planet. Yeah. Be an Islamic world. I mentioned a while back a few minutes ago that Muhammad couldn't read or write. But he said there appeared to him genies or dervishes, which at the first he thought were satanic. And his rich wife, much older to him, had to read to him. She also had a helper that sort of put the interpretation on it. Through his rich wife reading to him and her helper, he concluded that these dervishes, which at first he thought they were satanic, he concluded they were divine. Okay, he didn't write it. It was written by others. Okay, that's enough about that. Okay. Now, first thing we're told is to migrate. Migrate. Well, for them to migrate was very, very difficult for many centuries. They were land of sand dunes and camels. Under the thumb of the British and American oil companies who went in there and just carved up a lot of those nations, put their little puppets in there to rule them. So because that they couldn't migrate much or infiltrate much, but long came the industrial age. We don't plow with animals anymore. Long, here's engines. In World War I, a lot of the nations fought in that war, still pulled vehicles with mules. That's why the symbol of the American Army, still Army Mule. But before the end of World War I, they had airplanes such as that, but they've got to have fuel. They've got to have oil. So, in just a few short years, I mean, this world, because of the industrial age, is hunger for oil. There's great supplies of oil in this part of the world. And they'll just speed up the rest of it. You ever thought about how much oil, gas such as that was wasted during World War II? Enough to run this world for ages. So now we have an oil-dependent world. Now we have very rich, all rich folks. We have sheikhs and rulers over there that no end of the money that they have. Now they can begin to migrate, send their children around the world to the very finest universities. They can travel themselves. Now the migration begins to take place. You say, what's wrong with that? Well, it's also a form of infiltration. Now the question comes up, what's wrong with immigration? A lot of my ancestors once lived in Germany and Scotland. Maybe some of yours live in France, England, Italy. What's wrong with that? I got one, I suspect, when you're folk from Italy, Machiavelli, long ago maybe. But anyway, I won't bother the rest of you, but I don't care if you came from Japan. Doesn't make any difference. But other than American Indians, we're all a nation of immigrants. But look at the difference. Back in the late 1800s, there were hard times in Germany. And before you knew it, 33% of the American population was of German extraction. But in a few short years, we had World War I got started in Europe, 1917, some of those very same Germans that came over in the late 1800s, picked up arms, gladly went overseas and fought to defend the United States. If they didn't, their children did. Starting the World War II, how about men like Nimitz, down South Texas, Eisenhower? We could just name endless Germans that went right back overseas. Their dads or granddads came there, but they're not Germans anymore. They're Americans. I could go on with many examples of this. In World War II, one of our enemies was Mussolini. Il Duce, ruler over Italy. Yet there's many, many Italian boys or their sons went right back over there and they fought. You know why? They were Americans. In other words, they assimilated. Is that clear enough? So, yeah, we're a nation of immigrants. We're a nation of assimilated Americans. Next rule they were taught was migrate, infiltrate. Populate big families. Anybody here remember Yasser Arafat? Remember him? Little fellow had a face kind of like a rat. Remember him? I have a quote at home I can pull out of my doomsday file. I'm throwing away a lot of doomsday. Still got up here. Arafat says, the secret to our success is the Arab womb. We will win this war because of the Arab womb. You ever read the statistics about American females? I'm not picking on you. I can see why you do it. Well, start with career girls, marry later in life, and having fewer and fewer children. I'm not going to bug you with stats. Likewise, the Anglo-Saxon population in England, just Germany, name anywhere where you have the Japhetic. You had a book one time, old Buchanan wrote on the death of the West. Patrick, you remember him? Patrick Buchanan? The death of the West. Very interesting. Folk like us Western folk, having children's a lot of trouble. Need to get your education first. Don't have more than you can afford. Et cetera, et cetera. All over the Western world having shrinking families. Arafat and Islam practices just opposite. Populate. Next thing is to legislate. Several years ago, it's been a long time ago, I read that there were 120,000 Islamics in Dearborn, Michigan. It used to be home of the Ford Motor Company. Probably about three times that now, but they sent them a representative. This happened in more and more places. Representatives, state representatives, federal representatives. In fact, we even had one made his way all the way to the presidency. Allegedly, the first black ever elected. I'd say a third black at the most. Barack, that's his Arabic name. Muhammad is said to, this great dome of the rock that's inside that golden domed place. It's where the Temple Mount is, where Solomon's temple once stood. Great mosque of Omar called the Dome of the Rock. Inside that thing there's a huge rock. Because once upon a time, Muhammad got on the back of his mighty steed, Barak. First problem I got, though, Barak was a mare. And he ascended into heaven, got the revelation from the Quran, and landed there. Okay, Barak. Why, that's an Islamic name. Obama? No. Okay, let's move on. So, by legislating, move more and more forward. Watch ABC, NBC, CBS. I click them on just a little while every morning, long before the rooster crows. More and more beautiful. Anchor women come on. They're absolutely beautiful. Study their names. See if you can pronounce it. Okay. In teaching positions, advising presidents, all this, legislate. Isn't it amazing the way all these names rhyme? You remember things better if they rhyme, can't you? Migrate, infiltrate, populate, legislate. How can you forget all of this? I might even throw another one in here. Intimidate. They're all going to rhyme before we're done. Next thing is decimate. Take over the country, little by little, one city at a time. Finally, eliminate. Destroy all those who do not submit to Sharia law. Okay, you ready? You want to do a little study of Sharia law? Let me get these initials right, I hope I can. LGBT. T. While back, they put a Q on the end of it. You know that? Lesbians. You got it? Gays, bisexuals, cross this. Say, where'd that Q come from? Well, it's some of these males that finally find their feminine side. Well, I've never gotten in touch with my feminine side, and I'll never expect to. Soon be 62 years ago, June 7th, my wife and I are not old, we just started young. We got married. Oh boy, classic prototype female. Oh man, have we ever had some fun. Opposites attract, likes repel. I guess that's enough about that. She might get this tape, but if she does, it'll be a long time before she hears it. She spends her time listening to David and John. Wonderful, David. Wonderful, John. I mean, some point that I have hammered it. She sat out there and I've hammered a point, hammered it, and hammered it. Back when, we were just kissing a little newlywed. Starting way back then. Hammered it, hammered it. There she sits. Now, David makes that point. I want you to hear this. Listen. John. Makes simple. Oh.
Wow.
Have you ever thought of that? Okay, but that's all right. Doesn't bother me. I've got a thick hide, very forgiving heart. Bless her sweetheart, Mama. Of course, there's a responsible party back there, my precious Karen. That's all right. Keep it up, hon. You'd be surprised what I do when she's hooked on those tapes. I do what I want to. Okay. Now then. We move up to, where is that thing? Oh, well, I'm a little past halfway. Somebody says, you left a bunch of hanging stuff hanging. I want you to go back and explain. Oh, I've learned to leave people in suspense. I want to bring you up to last week. By the way, I had a birthday February 22nd. Remember? Yes, I started receiving quite a few cards early. I wonder why I wasn't getting the flood I got about 3 years ago, carried out in a box. Well, my darling, delightful daughter lets me know she put it on Facebook on the date, the 22nd. And it was announced in a lot of Primitive Baptist churches last Sunday. And I'm to expect, all that, whatever you want to call it. I'm supposed to expect that toward the end of this week. I should be expecting it when I get home. Okay. But last week, there's a lot more things happened other than me just having a birthday. I want to go back to about Monday. And there's a sweet super brain sister that patrols Facebook, patrols the internet, and all that. And she may be aware of everything I'm going to point out here this morning. One time I was busy as a one-armed paper hanger last week, my wife, I walked by the computer, she said, you've got to stop, look at this. And I stopped, took a glance at it. But came back in, my wife still dealing with it. Goes on and on and on. Said, you've got to read this. I said, I don't have time. She said, well, there's a little button you can press down here. My wife, doesn't know anything about electronics. But she's not as dumb as she pretends to be. You touch this. Well, early one morning, I touched it. I start reading. Couldn't begin to read it all. Another time late at night, I began to read. Very long declaration. You say, by whom? Okay, here's the Pope at Rome, the president. Some very unusual things about this Pope. This Pope is a Jesuit, and according to ordinary rules, a Jesuit cannot become the Pope. There's got to be some kind of an exception. They've got to agree to this. Say, who are the Jesuits? The Jesuits are the Marine Corps, the Green Berets of the Church at Rome. In many places, before the Jesuits went into a country, Spanish army went ahead of them with their bayonets and muskets. Aztec Indians, Central America, Incas. Long behind came the Jesuits. Okay, this fellow's a Jesuit. Present Pope goes to the Mideast. Here's one of the very leading imams of the Sunni Islamic world. And they are kissing each other. You say, well, I thought they were violent enemies. What about the Crusades and all that? That was once upon a time. I preached a sermon 46 years ago on the Roman-Islamic connection. There is a connection. Next thing I'm going to leave you in suspense. The whole denominational world out here is hooked on the idea, with a few exceptions, hooked on the idea that there will be a European Antichrist rule from Jerusalem. And I suppose if we didn't have anything to do this afternoon, we'd get for television, but maybe on a Sunday afternoon, just one after other comes on. This European Union, years ago, I remember when it was called the Common Market and then the EU. Now we have the Brexit, the British wanting out, and a lot of nations in it are in economic trouble. Rebelling and burning up against Macron in France. And poor old Una Merkel, woman ruler of Germany, she allowed more Islamics to infiltrate that country than any country in Europe. I don't know how she did in the last election. Haven't heard that yet. Some Germans out there, being like Germans are, they smell a rat, and they're forming neo-Nazi groups. In other words, bring back Hitler. Instead of wiping out Jews this time, we're going to wipe out the Islamics. Europe's in turmoil. You ought to offer me a tour to Europe? No. Why don't you buy me a tour up to Washita Mountains right north of me, or Turner Falls, up near where I was raised in southern Oklahoma? If you don't have that much money, how about just take me to a Dairy Queen this afternoon? I mean, you go on. You can have my seat. Okay. So the world's hooked on the idea that we're going to have a European Antichrist sit in Jerusalem. I strongly suggest to you we're going to have an Islamic Antichrist. We go back over in the Old Testament, heard Brother David quote this the other day. There's a few others waking up the idea of Islamic Antichrist, but I've never heard one of them use the verse you used. You didn't go on and say what I'm going to say about it. Read the context. Go back to the Old Testament. Speaking about Jesus, this man shall be the peace when the Assyrian shall come into the land. Not when the European, the Assyrian. Whoa! Now let's do a little geography. Where was Assyria? Well, it's just north of Israel. It covered the territory that Syria, part of Syria and Iraq cover today. Somebody's coming from that direction. The whole context of this lesson I'm talking about is not in the past, it's in the future. There's coming a time when the Assyrian shall come into the land. Now I'm going to go back and just pick up right past the Shiite view of the end of the world. Okay. Now, there's really three great world religions involved in this story so far, and they all have a lot in common. Okay, Orthodox Judaism is looking for a Messiah. No doubt about that. Roman Catholics and most of the Christian world is looking for Jesus Christ, we shall say, to come back. We come over here to Shiite Islam. They believe that there's one coming down in heaven they call the Mahdi, M-A-H-D-I. Some put a roll on Mahdi. So down comes the Mahdi. Okay. All have that in common. Looking for somebody out in the future. You know, some bright, glorious leader. What are you going to call him? Messiah? Mahdi? What are you going to call him? Okay, in all three religions, there's also a dark, evil, sinister character coming back to the Christian world, the Antichrist. I could give you the Arabic name of their dark, evil, sinister figure. Wouldn't help much. Move on down. Okay. Over in the Western world, this is all going to take place at Jerusalem. And Shiite theology, though, that one of these days there's going to be a war that you call, oh yeah, Armageddon. Christian Armageddon. Final conflict. And Shiite, thinking one of these days there'll be a great final conflict which will take place at Dabiq, D-A-B-I-Q. It's right outside Damascus. All kinds of things have been happening around Damascus lately. Rockets coming into Israel from around Damascus, Syria. Israel goes right back in, and I mean blast Damascus to beat the band of these rocket sites. Right outside that, Isaiah 17, giving you a lot of homework. Read it. Damascus is the oldest inhabited city on the face of the earth, as far as I know. Bible speaks about Damascus going down overnight. This city will be destroyed in one night. It says, in the evening it shall be there, and the morning it's gone. Okay, right outside Damascus, a place called Dabiq. Okay, let's look at the official magazine of ISIS. It's not pulp, it's very slick. Very slick, kind of like Armstrong's Plain Truth, remember? Slick. Well, what's it name? Dabiq. D-A-B-I-Q. That's the name of it. A few years back, I saw an issue of Dabiq, and their black Islamic flag was flying over the Vatican City. Here's St. Peter's Basilica, and Dabiq shows the Islamic flag flying over it. Now I'll get you a map and study the Mediterranean Sea. The shortest distance from Africa to the Vatican City is around Tunisia. Shortest distance. Shortest distance you can find. In Tunisia, they're training suicide pilots to fly small planes, small ones, lots of them, into the Vatican. All right, now the chiller of all chillers. Another issue of Dabiq comes out. Religion of peace and love. Here's the Islamic flag, or Shiite flag, ISIS, black, flying over Washington, D.C. Oh, how about that? And surely you've seen the pictures. I've seen many of them. On June 26th, just a few years ago, when our Supreme Court overthrew the definition of what is a family, what is marriage, what is a traditional marriage? On that very date, that evening, President Obama had the White House lit up in the colors of the rainbow. How many here ever seen that? Here's your White House. It ain't white no more. Somebody said bad grammar. Great theology. Great history. Colors of the rainbow. What is LBGTQ? What are they called? Rainbow Coalition. Definition of marriage overruled June 26th. Oh, boy. You reckon Almighty God will wink at this forever? Says the daddy. Somebody says, you're scaring me to death. Shouldn't be. Go to Luke 21, 25, and 26. And the Lord says, when all these things begin to come to pass, lift up your heads, for your redemption draweth nigh. In case some preterist wants to say, oh, fulfilled in AD 70. Did their redemption draw nigh then? No, nearly 2,000 years ago, and the world's in a worse mess than ever. I mean, the idea of the things I've believed for years, and I keep referring to Cool Springs, Danville, Georgia, that's 46 years ago this summer. I see things in this world converging. My wife's run horror films through her mind many times about what would happen to her and Danny if she lost me. I've had a few thoughts about what would I do if I lost her? She said to me over and over, I hope all three of us go up together. Well, I've got a direction in mind. Up, you Pete. There may be some things take place. I said, maybe. If it turns out that doesn't happen, all I'll have to say is I was wrong, that I won't give up my hope. There may be some things that the trivial stuff you're worrying about right now. My wife wants me to get up under her sink, you know, and paint it with some waterproof paint. And that's worrying her. You know, take my... Oh, boy, do we ever have fun. If it's something I want to do for myself, that involves climbing a ladder, involves... Oh, you're too old for that. If it's something she wants it done for her, get at it, Superman. Choose me out all the time for getting up so early. But since you're going to get up early, here's a bunch of things I want done. Despacio. How soon do you want it? Like my daddy. My daddy'd give me a job in this piano and cabinet shop. I say, when would you like this done? He said, oh, immediately, if not sooner, yesterday would have been fine. Okay. All right. All this trivial stuff. This is rusty, needs painting. My microwave oven's all burnt out. My blow dryer don't work. A lot of this stuff may seem very trivial to you. Maybe by this time next year. Maybe this time next week. Okay. So here we have the meeting last week. Here's the Pope kissing up to the head Sunni. Jewish leaders are here. All through that, page after page, that all on over this earth be the elimination of starvation, be the elimination of exclusiveness, be all inclusive. Nobody's going to preach exclusive. It's all inclusive. Well, what's that going to do to some fellow like me who's preached election all his life? I preach an exclusive doctrine. I preach it to primitive Baptists that Jesus Christ put up one true church. Now, while we're not faultless, we're closer to it than anything I know of on this earth. Many ways to God, they say. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Well, if there's a fellow has preached exclusivism, I've preached it for years and years. I mean, I'm dead meat. I don't figure they'd shoot me if I say, well, he's just gone off his rocker, you know, one more time. Okay. So why worry? Well, we can give you the book on him. He goes off track, you know, just lived out there in seclusion in the desert and gets among folks, don't know how to act. But be that as it may. Exclusive. That everyone on earth should have peace. Peace. Everyone on earth should be safe from war, from this. In other words, the whole theme of it from beginning to end is peace and safety. Peace and safety. I won't start naming you the different groups that were together in this thing last week. But while I was doing a speed reading job on it, just born with a natural ability to read that way, can't help it, I kept looking for any Shiite representatives, any Shiite view. The Mahdi, or Mahdi, will descend at the beak. Jesus Christ, who did not rise from the dead and go back to heaven, but he will rise wherever he's buried in a golden robe. And he will follow the Mahdi to Jerusalem to help him in his war with the Western world. Now, I'll describe to you mural I saw one afternoon. This was not on a religious fanatic show. It's sort of on a travelogue. They were showing a mural that was painted across one of the largest buildings in Tehran, Iran, capital of Iran. Also, it's a smaller version of it on other buildings. Okay. Let's start out describing it. Green, 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 all over the bottom. Green, green grass, green up here. If I had another 30 minutes, I'd show you that the official color of Islam is green. You'll find that in the 1997 CIA manual where they trained them how to do it. Green, green. Chloros. Greek word, chloros. Chlorophyll. It's the chloros or chlorophyll makes the plant green. That pale horse over there in Revelation, chloros. Say one day it translated pale. Well. Now I go to the backbreaker Oxford Dictionary of the English Language and I start studying green over here. Green, chloros. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. How many definitions of green you have? Somebody says that was a green ham. It means it's rotten. Somebody can't do something right, they're a greenhorn. You ever heard of that? Yeah. Move on down. Finally, I've got to speed up fast here. We come down here to the medical definition. Pale or sickly, especially when referring to death. Chloros can probably be translated as pale if you're talking about sickly or death. What follows in the wake of that pale horse? Death. Islam as a religion glorifies death. There's no such thing as Islamic having a hope of heaven. You folk have hope? No such thing. Only hope you have of heaven. Doesn't matter how wicked, how sorry, how mean you've been. Your only hope is to die in a jihad. That's your only hope. Then you're transported to heaven. You males to the 70 virgins and all that. Okay. I could move on with green, green, green. One time going through the World Almanac, here's the flags of many nations. Nearly every Islamic nation is green, one way or the other. Saudi Arabia, the flagship of the Islamic world, where the holy cities are, Mecca, Medina. I mean, their flag is solid green. Oh, okay. Back to the mural. Green, green, green everywhere. Out in the lead, glowing all over, is the Mahdi, or the Mahdi, behind him in a golden robe, like a little puppy, is Jesus Christ, as people picture him. In other words, we're dealing with sort of a John the Baptist, Jesus Christ. And then behind them is a great throng of people. Okay, that's the Islamic view of Jesus Christ. They say he was a great prophet come from God. He's a great prophet come from God, and he's coming back. But if you want to set him afire, call him the Son of God. They'll tell you in a minute, Allah does not have a son. Got it? Okay. So we have Jesus Christ, Mahdi and Jesus Christ head toward Jerusalem. At Jerusalem, Jesus Christ announces to Christians everywhere that I have been an Islamic all along. Got it? I've been an Islamic all along. Here's the one you worship. You have the Islamic Antichrist. Okay, remember in there somewhere there's a false prophet? You have the European false prophet. Got it? European false prophet. See, there's a satanic trinity. We have the trinity of God the Father, God the Son, and Holy Ghost. You have a satanic trinity. Okay. Then this is going to lead us into Zechariah 14, many, many other places. So I'll watch that. I suppose most people will get to say, well, What a picture. But I'm trying to interpret it with the spectacles of somebody that had no more sense than to read God's Bible and believe it. I don't claim to have a crystal ball or anything else back in 1973. I just had enough sense back then to read God's Bible and believe it. Some places you got to spiritualize. I don't spiritualize much. Some places you got to spiritualize. You say, oh, that's spiritual. You got to spiritualize that. I've always been afraid of spiritualizing, and I'm going to tell you why. I want to give you some words that rhyme. Spiritualize. Oh, that's spiritual. Got to spiritualize that. Let me say it a little slower. Spiritualize. See the difference? So I made up a little poem. He who would over-spiritualize doth often tell spiritual lies. He who would tell spiritual lies doth so because he has no eyes and is not wise. So, you want to be wise? There's so many things over in the Old Testament, Micah, Zechariah, that I've been told. I was told by the preterist, a lot of the good old Baptists back then, they wouldn't even know what preterist means. But it's all fulfilled, 80, 70, bless their old hearts. That's all figurative language. Well, they gone on. If they were living in my day, they might be up here preaching this just like me. If this war continues, one of these days I won't be around to defend myself. Your dad's not around to defend himself. So I'm going to cut them all the charity I can. But let's put it this way. Proverbs 4:18. The path of the just is as the shining light that shineth more and more under the perfect day. So I'm not going to look back on North Brother. They did the very best they could with what life they had. But we're approaching that day. I've got to close out somewhere here, but isn't this glorious? Okay. I want to read you some Bible language. We all rub slick as a bank, but I'm going to put an emphasis on it. I've seen a lot of people, shoot up eyebrows, went up like Venetian blinds. We go to some of my favorite language in the Bible. This won't take long. 1 Thessalonians 4:14. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. Only thing about you will ever sleep is your body. I'm moving on. For this we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord. Oh, that reveals a lot. We're not going to have a nuclear holocaust or something that'll destroy every living thing on the face of the earth. Several years ago, they ran a series on TV called The Day After. I mean, just earth burned into ashes. Went on about 3 nights. I had terrified people calling me up. Have you watched The Day After? I said, sure have. Could you sleep that night? I said, I died in the deep sleep of death. How'd you do that? I said, there will be a day after the day after. But this we say unto you, by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain, unto the coming of the Lord shall not prevent. Good old King's English, go before. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven. I've heard him say, well, that can't be the final coming of the Lord. Go back to Matthew 24, then he'll send his angels together, his elect, you know, from the four winds. That can't be talking about the final coming of the Lord. The Lord's going to do that himself. This says the Lord himself. That doesn't say all by himself. I could tell you experience I had at your very Jackson Airport, and I think I've had it more places than one. I was taken out to the Jackson Airport one morning. Found out my plane wasn't going out. In fact, no planes were going out. Nobody told us why. After a while, opened it up, planes started flying out. Well, I was talking to a security guard. And he said, well, the president himself had to land here. The president himself. Well, you mean all by himself? President doesn't go anywhere all by himself. Ahead of him goes the secret agents and screen everything. I mean, he arrives with bodyguards, all that type of thing. President himself. That's happened in two or three cities. I believe it happened you in one. I don't have to labor that to intelligent people, do I? Somebody might say, Brother Sonny was down at Tyler himself this morning. Well, I was alone. Brother Jerry Don was with me. Okay. For the Lord himself, not by himself, shall descend from heaven with a shout. Okay, now, let's deal with the secret rapture being caught up theory. You know, if the Lord just going to come back and quietly steal his people out of here, and your wicked neighbors won't know what happened to yuns? Listen, for the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, with the trump of God. Sounds noisy to me. Unless we've got some selective hearing here, that only the elect hear it, and other folk don't. Someone says, there you go with your selectivity. Yes, sir, here I go. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord there, and so shall we ever be of the Lord. Wherefore comfort one another with these words. It was up in the 1980s, and I'd been preaching quite a long time, or trying it. And it was about, well, I finally looked at that verse one time. Wherefore comfort one another these words. Since then, I've never conducted a funeral. Whether at the graveside somewhere, I don't mention this verse. You don't need William Cullen Bryant's, Thanatopsis, Tennyson's Crossing the Bar. No, this verse will do. Now, this is one of these places in the Bible where we need to read through the chapter division. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words, but of the times and seasons. Times and seasons of what? Times and seasons of the thing he's just been talking about, chapter 4. But of the times and seasons, brethren, ye have no need that I should write unto you. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. Oh, it's going to come as a thief in the night on God's people? We better read. For when they shall say, caught it? Next problem I've been handed about this verse, my very own wife. Oh, you read the Bible about the very elect? That's just for emphasis. When I say my very wife, I'm not trying to tell you I've got another one stashed away somewhere. Caught it? That's free. My very wife asked me one time, I was going through the kitchen, busy, a bunch of measurements, all kind of things going through my head. She said, stop. Oh, her diplomacy is out this world. Stop. Guess she'd been listening to you or John. She said, I have a question I want to ask. This says, and when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden come a destruction. Said, this world out here is in such a mess. Said, it'd take 100, maybe 200 years to get it straightened out and get it to the point. Peace and safety. Young preacher, South Alabama, asked me about that. Bobby Collins. I turned and told her, I said, that does not say when there shall be peace and safety. It says when they shall say. That whole theme I'm inviting you to pull up and read is peace and safety. Peace and safety. Peace and safety. But when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as to bail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness. Well, how's he going to come on me as a thief of the night if I'm not in darkness to start with? Work on that. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that that day should overtake you as a thief. You're all the children of light, the children of the day. We're not of the night, nor of darkness. Now, how in the name of common sense is it going to come like a thief of the night on a person that's of the day and they're not of the night? Therefore, let us not sleep. And that doesn't have a thing to do with what everybody's got to have a little bit of every night. Some folk, not many hours. My Uncle Ray Piles, about 11 hours a day. Oh, I told him one time when I was home, I'd just been to Elder C.M. Mills, one of the men I respected the most on this earth. Brother Mills, one night we'd had a nice discussion. He said, well, the average man needs 8 hours sleep. Now, I'm above average man. I like to get 10 or 11. Well, Brother Mills didn't sleep 10 or 11. I told that to Ray Piles. Oh, did he ever feast on that one? Doesn't refer to that kind of sleep. It's people's got their minds on the Super Bowl and the World Series and the Beatles and Lady Gaga and Beyonce and the Golden Globe Awards and all that nonsense. That's where they're asleep. But they that sleep in the night. Yes, sir. This whole mess out here, this wicked world, is in the night of time. Old hymn, oh, the night of time, soon shall pass away. And that they that be drunken are drunken in the night. Not just drunk on alcohol. Drunk on sex, entertainment, and all that. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet, the hope of salvation. For God hath not appointed us to wrath. Oh, well, preach all the hell you want to. I mean, preach them boiling the meat, falling off their bones. It won't bother me. Oh, I'm sorry for the folks. No, I wouldn't want to see that happen to at all. I don't think I've been appointed to such a thing. For God hath not appointed us to wrath, but to obtain salvation. Not to get a shot at it, chance at it. But to obtain salvation by our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us. That whether we wake or sleep, we should live together with Him. I thank you very much. And pray for this old country of mine and yours, I hope, because the camel is in the tent and the camel stinks. And I got all that done on less than one bottle. Come ahead, Pastor. Comfort these people a little bit.